For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
So, various technical arrangements, thank you. And good evening, everyone. So, I want to talk some more about something I started yesterday morning about response. But I want to talk today more about the oscillation between response and turning within. So, I spoke yesterday morning a number of examples of the many times in the practice instructions that Hongzhi talks about responding or response. Just maybe one of those again, and a couple of things towards the end, the practice instructions. So Hongzhi says, emptying one's sense of self-existence is wondrous. So we all have this sense of ourself, what we is, who we is, and one of the challenges of this practice is emptying that out. Emptying one's sense of self-existence is wondrous. This wonder is embodied with the spirit that can be enacted. And then there's one of Hongzhi's nature metaphors. The moon mind with its cloud body is revealed straightforwardly in every direction without resorting to signs or symbols, radiating light everywhere. It responds appropriately the beings and enters the sense dusts without confusion. So this responding appropriately is a key teaching in Zen, going back to the great 9th century ancestor Yunnan, who was asked, what is the teaching of the Buddha's whole lifetime? And he just said an appropriate response. So this sounds kind of clear and easy, but it's, you know, how to respond appropriately, how to mutually respond appropriately, is an art. It's difficult. It's challenging sometimes. How do we respond appropriately? But this is what our teaching tradition calls us for. And so we sit facing the wall, facing ourselves, sitting upright, settling into the Buddha on our own seat. And then get up from our sitting or go out into the world or engage with each other and try to respond appropriately. And sometimes we miss it. But we have this in mind to respond appropriately. So I'm going to read from a couple more practice instructions. Hongzhi says, moving straight ahead, totally let go. Wash clean and ground to a fine polish. Respond with brilliant light to such unfathomable depths, ungraspable depths, as the waters of autumn, or the moon stamped in the sky, or the flowering of spring all around us. So moving straight ahead, responding with brilliant light. Again, this is another challenge to us, but how do we just respond to each other with kindness, caring, as best we can? Hongzhi says, with 100 grass tips in the busy marketplace, graciously share it yourself. So this is, in some ways, the heart of our practice here in this non-residential sangha in Chicago and online in places distant sometimes. With 100 grass tips in the busy marketplace, graciously share yourself. This isn't something we have to, you know, do something special about or figure out or plan. When we are engaged in sustained sitting, kind of naturally, we settle some, and we have this capacity to graciously, hopefully, share ourselves. It's not that we have to do something special. It's just that having this experience of sustained practice, there is a quality of settledness that everyone here has, no matter how long you've been sitting. And sometimes we get unsettled and that happens. But how do we graciously share ourselves? And that's with all of the, he says, share yourself with all the grass tips, all the beings, all the phenomena in the busy marketplace. So this is a particularly apt practice for us here in this big city of Chicago. We come here and we sit, we settle, and then we go out. And how do we carry ourselves? How do we express kindness? Just in our everyday stuff, without trying to do anything special. I remember when we used to have a weekly sitting group down in Hyde Park. There was a woman who came there regularly, and she reported one time that she'd been sitting for a little while, a long time, but she said that she was going up to the elevator in her building. And somebody who was in the elevator with her said to her, "What have you been doing? There's something different." Something like that. And Billy recognized that something had clarified or softened or whatever from her practice. And we don't, it's not necessarily some sign or clear thing that shows that, but it's other people see it. She was sharing herself. So just to finish this passage, wide open and accessible, Ongsha says, walking along, casually mount the sounds and straddle the colors while you transcend listening and surpass watching. So Ongsha talks a lot about our relationship to, through our perceptive faculties to the dust, the phenomena, the grass tips all around us. Casually mount the sounds and straddle the colors while you transcend listening and surpass watching. So how do we share ourselves with everything without caught by it? Or when we get caught by it, being caught by it, but how do we just share ourselves? Perfectly unifying in this manner is simply a dedicated practitioner's appropriate activity. So it's not something fancy or special or something we have to figure out even, but this experience of settling helps us to just share ourselves and just meet things around us as best we can. So I want to add one other practice instruction. This is towards the end of them, next to last. This is a little longer, but anyway, I'll read some of it. The primal mind transcends conditioning. The primal Dharma does not speak, but all Buddhas and all ancestors are not detained here. So this fundamental mind transcends, goes beyond our conditioning in some way. The primal Dharma, the basic teaching, does not speak. We sit in silence. But all Buddhas and all ancestors are not detained here. In the second gate of meaning, which is the meaning, the gate of phenomena and of speech, stay engaged in dialogue and energy is aroused. So we do this. We talk to each other. This is instantly extracted and dispensed both to the first class practitioner and to the dull person. So it doesn't matter whether you think you're smart or stupid or whatever, or whether you are. This practice supports us. Originally, the people arrived at the truth themselves and affirmed it themselves. Then they began to discuss it only in order to straighten up and clean out forthrightly obsessive thinking and distraction. So then fast radiance without barriers has no middle or edge. Circling and spreading out, the light is glistening white and its illumination pervading in 10 directions. So there is a light that is part of our city. And it's not necessarily a light that is of any color or that can be seen with our usual faculties, but there's a light that we is and that is developed, deepened in our sitting practice. So we go out to the busy marketplace, but we also come back and stop and sit and settle. And this light somehow appears. The light is glistening white, its illumination pervading all 10 directions. Sit in meditation and entirely cut off causes and conditions and language of the three times. So as we're sitting, we are letting go of causes and conditions. Of course, we don't ignore causes and conditions. We're all caught by all the causes and conditions of our life and of the world. Function continues, reaching this, you cannot attach to a single dust mote. Only in silent serenity is the self known, full-spirited in its own glory, no stranger to sages, not diminished with worldly people. So in this serene illumination, this silent illumination, the self is known, the self appears. Maybe we don't see it completely, but it's there, and there's a light that comes from the Sazen, full-spirited in its own glory. From the beginning, only this is the single affair of the old home. How can you possibly attain anything outside yourself? So we go out into the busy marketplace, but then we come back and we turn the light within. And whatever is apparent, whatever is helpful, it's not from outside ourselves. It's something that comes from our deep settling and sustained settling. So this is a practice that it's important to just continue. Whether you sit every day or several times a week, to just allow this to emerge. How can you possibly attain anything outside yourself? This is called the genuine field, where awakening people immediately can respond to the 10,000 changes and enter every realm. So how do we just respond to all the changes? Change is difficult. And change is all around us. And change is where we live. And it's in the busy marketplace and it's on our seat. So this is the call, he says, the genuine field where awakened people immediately can respond to the 10,000 changes, enter every realm. How do we respond to all the changes in our life, in the world, with each other? This is challenging, but we can work towards appropriate response. He then says, wondrous function and spiritual penetration naturally are without any obstructions at all. So this wondrous function, how do we take care of the situation of the person sitting on your seat and the people sitting near you and each other and when we go out into the world, we go out onto Lincoln Avenue and all the shops and all the people and everything, how do we just share ourselves? This isn't something we have to figure out or work at. This is something that emerges from our sitting, from our caring, from our turning within. How do we share ourselves? So this is about Sangha in the widest sense. The Sangha of, you know, our group of Buddhist practitioners, some gathered here, but all the people who sometimes sit here in this wonderful center, all of them are in some ways still here this evening. All the people who come online also are with us in some way. How do we respond appropriately? How do we just share ourselves? So, you know, in the Zendo, when we're sitting, we sit upright, and the energy of our sitting, it's kind of, we can almost feel it. There's no particular early Buddhist psychology, Avishnapti Rupa, there's no physical sign of it, but there's a kind of form. And so we support each other when we're sitting. So when Adam came from being greeter and sat down next to me, I could feel his presence. We all are in communion. So how do we take care of this? How do we respond appropriately? And then come back and just face the wall, face ourselves, let go of causes and conditions. Just be present with this and this, and allow the wall and all beings to be present in front of us. So I can keep babbling, but I think I'll just stop, and I want to hear any comments or responses that any of you have. So, yes, Adam.
So the Metta Sutra is one of the sutras that I have the hardest time with, like, full-throatedly endorsing.
Oh.
You know, like,
great.
The idea of may all beings be happy?
Yeah.
Sure, I'm all about it.
Okay.
But people are awful. And very frequently we put ourselves in situations where one or the other can be happy. And whether that's like, you know, something like watching a sports game, or whether that's punching a random stranger on the street. Like, some people think that that would make them happy. Like, I have a hard time being like, you know what, that person should be happy in the way that they want to be happy, because their happiness directly causes suffering to other people.
Well, is that happiness? That's male. So you're asking a great question. And there are people who, in the world, all around the world, who cause trouble, who harm others. We know this. It's not, I talked about it some yesterday, but we all know this. So how do we, you know, just the wish, may all beings be happy, doesn't mean that all beings are happy. It means that we have some intention. We have some direction. We have some caring. We have this wish that all beings be happy on all sides, you know. It's not about taking one side or the other when there's a dispute. And when somebody's punching somebody else, or one country's invading another country, or whatever. You know, how would we want the intention, this bodhisattva intention, this awakening mind that is so important, is, may all beings be happy. And, you know, we say, beings are numberless, I vow to free them. Well, you know, what does that mean to free all beings? It's the same question. What does it mean to enter all Dharma gates? Well, there are lots of Dharma, there are Dharma gates we see that we can enter. Anyway, it's a great question. Other responses to Adam? David Ray.
I love this topic so much. So I really do. I'll be on the other camera. So I'm teaching a Shakespearean comedy right now, 12th Night, and we're thinking about this thought that comedy might be a delivery system of, you know, what Christianity calls caritas or agape, and what in this tradition we call metta or maitri, and you know, this thought that it applies to the scuzziest parts of me and everybody else, and that nobody deserves love or happiness. If we got what we deserved, we'd be in a bad way, very bad way. And it's my scuzz bucketry that makes me annoyed at other people's faults and flaws and so on. And so I'll be quite frank. I am finding Hongzhe challenging right now, like a very strong, sweet fragrance that I really enjoy in small doses and that cloys in bigger quantities. And I find myself resisting because I don't feel enough of my own struggle and gnarly messiness reflected in these beautiful lyrical images. And when I hear about graciously sharing oneself with the bustling marketplace, I'm like, I'm not the sweet, happy monastic, you know, bestowing bliss, bestowing hands on the marketplace. I am the bustling marketplace.
Of course.
You know?
That's
so anyway,
the point.
Anyway, those are some thoughts.
Good. Yes, yes. Cloyingness.
Yeah.
It's, you know, yeah. There are two styles of teaching, it said, grasping and granting, you know. So there are strict teachers who will, give their students a hard time. I have trouble with that. I'm more on the granting side. I want everyone to be happy. But, you know, sometimes we have to say things to each other. It's difficult. It's challenging. And, yeah, I don't feel Hongzhe that way, but I understand what you're saying, that he's... always talking about this, about the light and calmness and appropriate response. So I'm sorry that this practice period is made you sick, David.
I can't say I share that feeling of being sorry.
Okay, I'm glad that the practice period is made you sick.
It's an interesting sensation.
Yep, okay. Well, this is causes and conditions that we have to find our response to. I see Bryant has his hand up.
He'll get to it earlier as well.
Oh, he'll get to it. He'll get to it first.
Well, that's such a great topic. But I think that also, you know, these are Buddha's words in the Metta Sutta. And I think Buddha kind of says happiness isn't just getting everything you want and getting rid of everything you don't want. Happiness is actually doing what Hongzhe says, letting go. I think where Hongzhe falls short, if I may be so sacrilegious, this is sort of like, oh, how does that happen? How do you let go? And I think David Ray or Adam are giving good examples. You realize your limitations and the ego of trying to make something of everything to make myself comfortable. And at some point, that becomes somewhat nauseating. and true happiness is like, oh, wow, I don't have to be stuck in that same old psychological pattern of constantly trying to control the world for my comfort. And then you think of the comfort of others, and, you know, with graciously sharing yourselves, as you were speaking, Taigen, I thought of this whole Zendo and our online Zendo and how moved I am by everybody's generous effort. You know, on Sunday, Adam showed up, Douglas showed up, Chris showed up, Brian showed up, you know, people showed up in the morning beforehand, but almost everybody, and Mike led us in this, like, great clean period. Like our Zendo is so clean, it feels so great. Mm-hmm. But like this great effort to put this show on is this wonderful little marketplace we live in. So it's difficult work. What makes it challenging is a great question. Why is this so challenging to wish all beings to be happy or to kind of choke on the words of Hongzhi? What makes this so challenging? Look at yourself, Ogetsu. And we see karma and its consequences. And we learn, we support each other to stand upright. So that's my little speech. But I think these are such great chew toys that we struggle with to help us open and allow us to be who we are with each other as we are in this moment.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. I'm really grateful for all of our practice together.
Yes. Thank you, Hukes. And you mentioned limitations. I think one of the maybe most challenging parts of sustained Zazen practice is that we start to see our limitations. And how do we not try and crush them, but just, okay, here it is again. How do we appreciate our limitations? How do we work with our limitations? How do we respond appropriately right in the middle of some limitation where we get triggered by something. And the more we practice, the more we might have the capacity to accept our limitations and respond rather than just react. So thank you.
I want to add something because good. I don't mean just limitations like, oh, I'm not a good Buddhist, but I also want to point to our broken hearts, to the pain that we've had in our lives that make us contract and we feel this in our zazen. And so there's a grieving and a sorrow and a compassion for those parts of ourselves that have been hurt. So that's not a limitation, that's a dharma gate or a sweet spot. Because, you know, we have it all together. You know, I've got it all together. I'm a great Zen practitioner. I can sit for hours, you know. If you just follow that a while, you always come to these tender spots, and that's where we actually find loving kindness at, is through that tenderness in ourselves and others, even if somebody appears to be a demon.
Thank you. Brian just had his hand up for a while. Share, Brian.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I appreciate the opportunity to comment on this topic. It's one that allows, I think, a very profound teaching about what the Dharma is really about. The Metta Sutta is one of the oldest suttas from the Sutta Nipata collection. And, I think a lot of times the initial reaction is the typical reaction from someone who is not familiar with the idea of dependent arising, and the idea that, it's variously stated, but we have really no nature at all. It is a transformative possibility that we always are. One teacher stated in a very, very clear metaphor, even a dirty dish rag can be washed clean. And so I think the idea in the Metta Sutta is not that we are expected to wish, you know, like we're giving a gift or a reward to someone that doesn't deserve it. I think the idea is that with the practice of transforming our own mind into radiating kindness, even to people that we don't think initially deserve it. The idea is we're helping transform the world for the better. And, you know, since it is an old sutta, you know, there's actually a sutta called the Angulimala Sutta about a guy who in the Buddha's day was an actual murderer who famously the Buddha transformed. He had a necklace of skulls and he killed a lot of people. And then he ran into the Buddha on the road and the Buddha, through the power of his non-reactivity and, you know, teachings and what have you, eventually Angulimala took robes, became a monk, and as the story goes, became an arhat. So that to me has always been really the power of the Metta Sutta, is not we're giving a reward to someone that we think doesn't deserve it, but we are having faith that through our practice of gentleness, of non-reactivity, of awakening our own mind, which also includes how we think of others, you know, into a more spacious aspect of possibility. We see the possibility in another. That is the really transformative power of this sutta. So that would be my two cents.
Thank you, Brian. Any other comments?
Chris.
Oh, hi, Chris. Good to see you.
Maybe happiness is overrated. you know, I kind of think of it as maybe instead of be happy, be satisfied, be tolerant. I think that's maybe more achievable.
Yeah, thank you. I agree. It's not about, well, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It means so many different things to some people. Anyway, thank you. Any other last response? David, Ray?
Just more camera adjusting over here.
Oh, okay. The camera has a response.
No doubt.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much. May you all be, if not happy, at least settled and satisfied with your practice. So we'll close with the four Bodhisattva vows.
Beings are numberless, we vow to free them, and illusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them, dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them, this way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow.